This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. It's Friday, the 13th of May. I'm Dave Benninger. We're in good luck to have you with us this week. Coming up, it's one village public safety officer's last day on the job today, and we hear a story or two about what the community thinks of his service and time.
And he got out of his car, and the guy came up and threw his arms around his neck and said, "Even when I was in trouble, you were so good to me, and I'm so sad you're quitting." And, you know, that was just really sweet. I mean, Jason is going to be really missed.
But there's a growing problem of VPSO vacancies around Western Alaska, like in the Lake and Penn Borough, where there's just one officer left.
The communities that had VPSOs and don't have them anymore, the VPSOs are sorely missed.
Bedbugs are a problem in the region, too. We'll hear how hospital staff with EPA money are helping to combat the problem, as well as how one local woman was able to finally get rid of the pesky bugs.
I felt embarrassed, and I felt like people kind of shunned me once they found out that I had bedbugs.
Plus, that legislature just keeps going and going and going.
A lot going on, and whether we get things done by the end of the month, I know everybody's going to be trying to make that happen.
Representative Bryce Edgman stops by for an update. Those stories and more are coming up after a look back at some of the week's news. Looking back all the way to last week, a man in Equoc called late in the day Friday to report what he just found in his subsistence net.
"My name is Philip Eckelcock Sr. from Equoc. I sent my net out a mile below the village, and I checked it, and I got a 10-pound sockeye."
An estimated 1.74 million sockeye will return to the Nooshigak River this year, though it'll be another 5 to 6 weeks before most of them show up. Icicle Seafoods announced it finally has a buyer. Farm salmon giant Cook Seafoods, based on Canada's East Coast, announced this week that it will buy the company whole rather than splitting up its three main parts. Cook spokesperson Nell Hulse says the company intends to keep Icicle as a standalone company with few changes for now.
"We're maintaining the management team. The CEO will continue to head up the company, so we're very fortunate we'll be able to learn from an experienced team of people."
Icicle had been for sale for about a year and a half. Last year's deal with some Indonesian investors fell through. Terms of this sale were not disclosed. It's expected to be finalized by next month. Governor Bill Walker last Saturday signed a bill designated August 10th as Wild Salmon Day in Alaska. The measure, sponsored by Representative Bryce Edgman, is designed to call extra attention to one of the state's premier natural resources. Wildlife biologists are reminding area hikers, walkers, and bikers to take care around wildlife. This week marks the start of calving season for moose and caribou, says Togiak Refuge biologist Andy Aderman.
"Caribou on the Nooshigak Peninsula should start calving any day now. That'll continue through early June, but most of the calves are born by the end of May. And they can calve anywhere on the peninsula. They seem to be more concentrated inland from the coast a mile or two, but you can find them way down south to up even north of the hunting area on occasion."
He says cow moose can be extremely protective of their calves and are often nearby but out of sight of calves that may appear abandoned. Myron Nanning is out as head of Association of Village Council Presidents. Nanning was president for 24 years but tendered his resignation Wednesday. He steps down amidst a string of layoffs and an investigation into longtime mishandling of some federal money. Governor Bill Walker tapped Fairbanks defense attorney Susan Carney to the state's Supreme Court this week, filling a seat soon to be vacated by Justice Dana Fabe, who's stepping down after 20 years. Around midnight Wednesday morning, a young man was shot in the back in Dillingham's HUD housing area. The victim, 23-year-old Isaiah Thompson, was medevaced to Anchorage and may be paralyzed from the chest down, according to authorities. The alleged shooter, 21-year-old Reese Johnson, is being held on $100,000 bail on a first-degree assault charge. Wednesday morning, neighbor Steve Johnson said he wasn't surprised by the incident, despite the fact the two are buddies.
"Every other night there's a lot of screaming outside, and a lot of people just basically drunk, mad at each other. It happens a lot on this cul-de-sac."
In other news, another Dillingham man has apparently died just a day after being released from state custody. The family of 24-year-old Brendan Ramey learned he had been found dead in Palmer after he left the Goose Creek Correctional Center. His dad, Kevin Francis Ramey in Togiak, says he still has few answers from the Palmer Police Department as to what exactly happened.
they're investigating it, and they won't say much about, you know, the things they see. I just know that he went to some people he knew his house in Palmer, and then they found him yesterday morning dead. And it's really hard to say right now or how many people were over, you know, involved at the house or what the circumstances were.
Ramey served time for two separate burglary and theft cases in 2013. And the American bison is now the national mammal of the United States, joining the ranks of the bald eagle as an official symbol for the country. President Obama signed the National Bison Legacy Act into law Monday. There are more than 160,000 bison on private farms and ranches and an estimated 20,000 on public lands, including here in Alaska. More on this week's news can be found at our website, kdlg.org. You're listening to Bristol Band Beyond on KDLG. Today is the 116th day of the 90-day legislative session. Our lawmakers are starting to remind me of a certain pink bunny.
Still going. Nothing outlasts the Energizer. They keep going and going and going.
Well, sorry to the younger generation who probably don't know about those old commercials. District 37 Representative Bryce Edgman was in town last weekend for the Business of Fish Workshops and dropped by our studios to speak with us. I asked him first, how long must this go on?
Well, I think we're going to keep at it until we get things done. And you might ask, what does that mean? I think the quickest way to respond to that would be to say that we're down to essentially a handful of big-ticket items, including the budget. We haven't fully gotten that passed. We haven't gotten one of the governor's top priorities, which is the restructuring of the permanent fund dividend, a permanent fund program, something that would provide us the means to pay for state government down the road. We have not gotten an oil tax credit rewrite bill taken care of, and that's at the moment kind of gumming things up in both the House and the Senate. We also have a number of smaller tax measures that we're dealing with. Again, something the governor has put forward. We've got the conference committee action, the House and Senate and negotiating teams doing the final work on the operating budget. And then in the middle of all that is in what would have been in past years probably the most prominent part of it all. But these days, the capital budget is just a lot smaller and essentially enough money to match federal dollars and a few very top of the list priorities around the state. So that's kind of where things are at now.
So none of you will come home ahead of this election with big ticket items for the constituents out of the capital budget this year, more likely than not.
More likely than not.
All
yes.
Right. All these other big ticket items we've been talking about for months. Critics say, how come it's not done? Why can't they get their job done? What do you answer to people who are critical of the timing of this?
Well, and I think that's the essential question. First thing to look at is that the suddenness of Alaska's fiscal situation. Just a couple of years ago, we were essentially in what looked to be a long period of surplus revenues tied to the fortunes of oil production and certainly oil money in the state of Alaska. So you know, come January 2016 of this year, we were essentially, you know, in an environment where oil was now paying 20 to 25% of the cost of state government, and the bottom had kind of fallen out. So with that as the backdrop, we're in an election year cycle, and conversely, also in a year where there are a number of other big ticket items that just sort of converged. Most recently, a big crime bill that just passed the House and hopefully will be on its way to the governor here soon, along with a number of other items, including, like we were talking a moment ago, having to go in and touch the, you know, sort of the holy grail of them all, and that is the permanent fund itself, which of course pays for the permanent fund dividends, and having to take a hard look at maybe changing how all that works so we can make up for some of that difference in lost oil revenues.
Even if the legislature votes to tap into permanent fund earnings, passes new taxes, and increases old taxes, it still will not likely be enough to fill the $4 billion deficit. So this session, like last year, will likely come down to the House needing a supermajority vote to tap into state savings in the Constitutional Budget Reserve. That gives the minority some leverage it doesn't otherwise enjoy during the session. I asked Representative Edgeman, a Democrat who caucuses with the majority, about that.
So the minority, the House minority, it has to be in favor of dipping into that savings account in order for us to get that supermajority, that three-quarters majority in the House that we need. And they, of course, are going to want to add a few things into the budget. I think they're also holding firm on having a stronger oil tax rewrite. And then they want to have a voice in the restructuring of the permanent fund corpus and whatever comes of that, as well as really be a player in a couple of the big ticket items, again, the crime bill and so forth that just passed here recently. So you look at the 50 or so extra days that it took us to get things done last year in 2015, and you would hope, as I do on my most optimistic days, that we learn something from that. And then ultimately, when we get to, I think, more towards the end of the month here, and assuming we haven't gotten things done yet, we're going to draw on those lessons learned and be able to put them into practice so we can come up with an agreement that sort of gets us out of Dodge before June rolls around and the election season for most begins in earnest.
Okay. Do you see anything particularly unreasonable either from the majority or the minority at this point that is making compromise difficult?
There's really good faith efforts on both sides to try to reach an agreement on a lot of issues. And I know there are some who, you know, may watch Gavel to Gavel regularly or read the papers or listen to the radio or what have you and really get the impression that not a lot is going on or that there's just this great period of inactivity down in Juneau, when in reality, I would say otherwise. And of course, I'm an insider and I'm down there in a lot of those meetings. But there
some of them now behind closed doors.
Things
are worked out.
You know, negotiations where you really can't involve the public, take the oil tax bill itself, just given the sheer complexity of it. But also, you need to be able to sit down and bridge the gap, the differences, bring people together, and then it will come out in the public process, and the public will have every opportunity to weigh in on it, as they should. A lot going on, and whether we get things done by the end of the month, I know everybody's going to be trying to make that happen.
That was District 37 Representative Bryce Edgeman, who joined me last Saturday here at the KDLG studios. This is Bristol Band Beyond, back in a moment. Bed bugs seem to be a hot topic around Bristol Bay lately, with more families quietly dealing with the problem and certain hotels or venues plagued by rumors of infestation. The Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation is helping rural Alaskans fight bed bugs with a $100,000 grant from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. KDLG's Hannah Colton has more.
It was the dead of winter about 6 years ago when Tina Tinker first started finding itchy bites on her body.
That's how I found out, because I'm kind of allergic to bed bugs because I swell up really bad. I mean, I get a big welt.
She says she and her husband did the first thing they could think of. They threw out everything in the bedroom.
We moved the bed, the dressers, everything out of my room, and we stuck them all outside. At the time, it was like 30, 40 below.
She'd find out later that freezing temperatures do not reliably kill bed bugs. But this was just the beginning. Tinker lives in the village of Aleknagik. She's the IGAP environmental coordinator there. And at the time the bed bugs struck, she did not own a washing machine. So her next step was a major trip to the laundromat, about a half hour away.
So I had to bring them down to the Dillingham laundromat, and then I washed them all and then dried them all, and that cost me about $700 just to dry and wash those clothes.
Over the next year and a half, Tinker waged an all-out war against her bedbugs. She says there wasn't any program or resources to turn to locally, so she was going off of hearsay and her own research.
I basically went on Google and did some reading, and from there, you know, I kind of took it in my own hands.
It was an expensive effort. She had to order supplies to be shipped in from Anchorage. She took a week off work once to steam, scrub, and vacuum her entire house. And Tinker says her infestation cost her her social life, too.
You know, you go through a change in your personality. I felt embarrassed, you know, and I felt like people kind of shunned me once they found out that I had bed bugs. Just kind of kept away, you know. But then I kind of told my friends, too, you know, you shouldn't be coming to my home because you could bring them back to your home and infest your home.
Tinker says she lost a lot of sleep to stress over those months. But her diligence and hard work finally paid off. The bugs were gone and stayed gone for 4 or 5 years. Then a few weeks ago, she had another scare when her son came home from a trip and found bites on his body. This time, though, Tinker wasn't alone. She went to the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation to the office of Jennifer Scarrata.
We did put together a toolkit.
Scarrata is an environmental health specialist. She's heading up BBAHC's 2-year effort in coordination with the Tanana Chiefs Conference to fight bedbugs throughout rural Alaska. Bedbug infestations have been on the rise in the U.S. in recent years. But Scarrata says the issue is even worse in Bush, Alaska, where people depend on air travel to get anywhere.
And the bed bug is actually known as the hitchhiker bug. It generally crawls onto a person or their luggage. So since we have to get on a plane pretty much to go everywhere, that's one of the reasons. And then also, we don't have tools in rural Alaska that we do on the road system or the lower 48.
And this is Scarrata's main focus right now. She's already sent out nearly 30 toolkits. The toolkits include mattress covers, trash bags and gloves, caulk to seal up little crevices, and Cemexidust, a fine powder that kills bugs by dehydrating them. Along with the toolkit, Scarrata gives out information. She's trying to squash some misconceptions about bedbugs.
Because a lot of people ask all the time, they're like, is this a bed bug bite? And they'll hold out their arm or whatever. You know, we have a lot of biting insects in Alaska, so some people don't even react to the bites because it's an allergic reaction. Some people might break out in a hive. Some people might just have a small red dot. So that's the first thing I try to let people know. Don't use the bite as a sign.
What's better, says Scarrata, is to look for the flat, reddish-brown bug itself or for the skin it sheds 5 times on its way to becoming an adult. Another sure sign is bug poop.
A lot of times that's the first sign people will see are the fecal stains, and they can look almost like a rust stain on your mattress or even, you know, a reddish rust stain, and sometimes even more like a mold, like that kind of color.
Besides causing stress and loss of sleep, bedbugs don't really pose a health hazard. They're not known to transmit diseases. So Scarrata says the worst part about having them is probably the social pressure. Tina Tinker says it's important to be respectful to those dealing with bedbugs.
Yeah, just because they have bedbugs doesn't mean, you know, they're dirty people. And don't shun them because, you know, we all have feelings. And once your feelings get hurt, you know, it's hard to get back to your, I guess, happy life.
Using its grant from the EPA, BBAHC plans to put together over 100 more toolkits to send to families around the state. Then next year, Scarrata and her team plan to go even bigger, putting tent-like hot boxes in communities so they can decontaminate larger items like couches and beds. It'll be phase 2 of trying to get rural Alaskans the resources they need to fight this irritating insect. In Dillingham, I'm Hannah Colton.
Continuing this week's show, an issue that seems to have slowly developed and is now catching people by surprise is a shortage of village public safety officers, especially in Western Alaska. Bristol Bay, for example, is down from 16 positions to now just 6. That changes to 5 tomorrow as one retires today. More on that in a moment. Up around Nome, there are 11 vacancies and 6 filled positions. I asked Bryce Edgman about these shortages when he was in the studio earlier this week.
What I think all of us painfully recognize is that the VPSO program, since literally its inception, has always been a program that has had a lot of turnover. And some point to pay, some point to just the natural hardships that come with being a VPSO in a small community, and others point to the fact that VPSOs aren't state employees and don't get benefits like state troopers do. And so there's a whole range of things that are at play with the high attrition rate with VPSOs around the state.
State Trooper Captain Andrew Merrill is the commander of the VPSO program. When I spoke with him recently, he pointed out that recruiting for most law enforcement positions is tough, especially for those in remote villages where you may work alone and unarmed. But he also said that burnout factor has been tough to conquer, especially with the amount of time the officers find themselves on duty.
VPSOs work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, essentially. They have regular work hours, but everybody in the village knows they're VPSOs, so a lot of our VPSOs experience people knocking on their doors at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning or on their days off, wanting them to respond and deal with things, and they don't get a break. So we have burnout, which leads to a 33% turnover rate. VPSOs just get overworked.
That 33% turnover rate is problematic for a lot of reasons. The officer needs to get to know the village. The village needs to get to know its officer, and so on. But also, as the state is making major cuts to the budget, positions that are left unfilled are, for now, going to go unfunded for the next fiscal year.
We experienced cutbacks last year. We had a significant reduction to our budget this year. In 2017, we're going to experience another reduction, but not as severe as last year. We have great support in the legislature and the governor's office, as well as with the commissioner of public safety and the colonel of public safety to support our VPSOs out in the field. So we're not struggling to stay alive. It's just a matter of the fiscal climate that we're currently in requires that we pull back in and try to maximize the efficiencies of our program.
In the entire Lake and Peninsula borough, from Perryville to Port Allsworth, there is currently just one VPSO. And the borough is aware that their state trooper in Iliamna is scheduled to leave next month, and they don't know that he'll be replaced. Borough Manager Nathan Hill says he's hearing about this problem up and down from 16 of the borough's 17 communities.
It is a concern. It's a need that's not being met. I don't think we're alone in the situation, and I'm not sure. I do know that the state is making cuts to certain law enforcement branches right now, and I don't know if they're direct cuts to us, but with our only trooper leaving, I would surmise that it is part of the state budget cuts. So it's a concern, and I do think that the borough would benefit of having more VPSOs in the community. I've witnessed situations that the village public safety officer was critical in saving lives and putting out fires, literally. It's not just chasing the bad guys. It's helping with safety issues kind of across the board. And the communities that had VPSOs and don't have them anymore, the VPSOs are sorely missed.
The one VPSO on the east side of Bristol Bay is Sergeant Byron Wise in Pilot Point. Most know him as Barney. Sergeant Wise has been on the job a long time. He's well aware of the issues with turnover here in Bristol Bay and attributes some of the problems as those that make village life tough for a lot of outside transplants. High cost of living, isolation, trouble fitting in and finding things to do. But when you're a first responder, maybe the only one, Sergeant Wise says the village may come to expect you to always be available. He comes back to the idea that the long hours may be burning out good officers.
Working in the village, as long as you're there on your days off, basically you're required to respond. And depending on where you're at, some of the villages, you know, you make an arrest on people and you take the prisoner to your holding cell until transportation and stuff can be made to have them flown out. And there's times where the weather gets bad and you can't fly a prisoner out for, sometimes 1 to 2 days. I've had that situation and stuff happen here just recently where I made an arrest. And because
because of the weather, the planes couldn't get in and out, and I was basically stuck with a prisoner for 41 hours. I didn't have no jail guards. There's things like that. I mean, you know, it's not all the time, but it happens.
Sergeant Wise tells me that before the state budget got so tight, state troopers used to fly in pretty often, sometimes just to visit, sometimes to help with investigations, and sometimes just for training. Their presence was welcome and helpful. Now he says they'll fly from King Salmon, Dillingham, or Anchorage, but only for emergencies. Sergeant Wise has been on the job 15 years this month. He says he likes his job and offers few complaints, except to say that he does empathize with the turnover for reasons listed above. Sergeant Wise credits his tenure in part for having grown up in the villages he served and enjoying the same lifestyle that keeps people in rural Alaska.
I lived in Port Iden for 20-some years, moved to Pilot Point, but when I was younger, as a kid, before the VPSO job, I would always go to Pilot Point area for commercial fishing. And so I knew most of the people within the community of up there, so I have a good working relationship with most of the people in both the villages. And I like to hunt, I like to fish. I have my family out there. Between my wife and me, we have 8 kids. So it's the lifestyle we like to live. When we do get days off and some nice weather, we'll go beach combing, or we'll go, take a boat, go out and go fishing. In the wintertime, we can go ice fishing.
Bristol Bay lost a VPSO when Tom Adol was murdered in Manicotic in 2013. There have been vacancies in New Stoyahawk since both VPSOs there were arrested for domestic violence assault a few years ago. And some vacancies occur when VPSOs retire, as is the case today. First Sergeant Jason Creasy's last day on the job as Aleknagik's quiet, dedicated safety officer is today. Creasy does not like speaking with the media, and we can't hold that against anybody. But as Mayor Carolyn Smith tells me, it wasn't just us he tended to keep quiet too.
For 18 years, Jason would never say a word about what was happening and what he was doing. And he'd call me and he'd say, oh, I had a terrible weekend. And I'd say, well, what happened? And I'd be very curious. And he never, for 18 years, ever divulged a name or a situation. And he cared so much about people. One night he broke up a party at like 2 in the morning, and it was like 30 below zero, and it was on this side of the lake, and he drove a snow machine over because he got a call. He broke up the party, and one of the people was a North Shore resident, and he offered the guy a ride home in the night, and it was snowing and cold, and the guy refused to get on his snow machine and ride with him because he was mad, that Jason broke the party up. Jason followed that guy walking all the way around the lake with his snow machine to make sure the guy made it home safely, because he was really drunk. And you know what? He never told me who it was. I have no idea. But you know what? I thought of that story. He said he was really tired because it took him like 2 hours to drive around the lake following this guy, going really slow, just making sure that he didn't get lost and go through the ice. And you know, that's just one thing about Jason. He really cared about the people here. And last week he got a phone call, and somebody wanted to come across over to this side of the lake. And when he got out of the car, he thought, oh, no, he's going to hit me. He wants to fight. And he got out of his car, and the guy came up and threw his arms around his neck and said, even when I was in trouble, you were so good to me, and I'm so sad you're quitting. And, that was just really sweet. I mean, Jason is going to be really missed.
The Bristol Bay Native Association says it will begin advertising Creasy's job on Monday. There are currently VPSOs in Ekwok, Kalikinik, Manicotic, Pilot Point, and Togiak, and one on the way shortly to New Stoyahawk. BB&A is hiring one position for first-come, first-serve for Port Hyden, Chignik Bay, or Igigik. The rest of Bristol Bay's villages are probably going to stay vacant for a while. Back in a moment. Before we go, we want to leave you with this postcard of a singing powerhouse. The Tenalian Choir from Port Allsworth recently got a top rating at the state choir competition in Anchorage. Here's a recording of that striking performance and choir director Patty Allsworth with some details.
Hello, my name is Patty Allsworth, and I am the volunteer choir director for the Tenalian School. It is called Four Strong Winds, and it is by Ian Thompson, and it was written from someone in Canada. And it's just, it's kind of a folk type song. We liked the story. If you notice, it ends kind of unfinished, and all through the song they're asking a question about if they're going to be able to continue their relationship. So they like the story, and they love the harmony and the dynamics on it. Our choir consists of 16 young people, and our high school consists of 19 young people. So the majority of our kids love to sing. Port Oswald has a total of about 200 people, and then we swell in the summer. So we do sing here at home, but we've also been able to travel this year. The choir sang for the state superintendent's conference, and it was in King Salmon. And they also did the national anthem for two different openings for March Madness for the ASAA basketball games. And through the summer that are here, we sing once a week for a group of veterans that come here. So we find places for them to sing. Okay, we have auditioned 4 times to go to state, and because it's so expensive to travel, we send in a recording, and then they tell us if we made it or not. And 1 year we didn't, but 3 times we've made it, and of the 3 times we've been able to have a number one superior rating, which is as high as they give. And our music is not, you know, Italian opera, fantastically sophisticated, but our kids sing from their heart, and that seems to come through. And every year the judges have been so complimentary. That we've had a judge every year. He says, I don't know what it is, but you kids make me cry. And I think that he sees the kids' sweet spirits coming through. And this year they also won the academic award for the whole state. So we're a little 1A school competing against 4A schools. So, you know, even to make it to state to me is pretty exciting. And then to place right in the top is pretty much amazing. And it's very precious to me because of those 16, I have a daughter, a niece, 5 granddaughters, and 2 grandsons in the choir. And the other 5 are just really special kids to me also. So these are kids that just enjoy music and have learned how much fun it is to harmonize together and spend this time just making music sound beautiful, and they love it.
Choir from the Tenalian School in Port Allsworth, wrapping up another episode of Bristol Bay and Beyond. You can find this and past episodes at our website, www.kdlg.org. Keep in touch with us with feedback and ideas. You can call us at the station anytime or use the email news@kdlg.org. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. My thanks to Hannah Colton for her help this week. We look forward to seeing you back here next Friday.